Welcome to Living Villa Capelli, where we learn life is so much sweeter when you add a little Italian to it. And now your hosts, Paul Capelli and Stephen Crutchfield.
Hi, I'm Paul.
And I'm Stephen.
Together we're Paul and Stephen.
Now we're Living Villa Capelli.
Yes, we are. And you're not.
And today we have an all-star guest. We have Billy Joel. We have Elton John. Otherwise known as
Freddie Mercury.
Oh yeah, that was a good one. We had to do that one. Otherwise known as Michael Hines from Australia.
From Brisbane, right?
Yes, Brisbane.
Brisbane.
Whenever you say Brisbane or Melbourne, it's basically you take out all the vowels from the last half of the word. So Brisbane.
Brisbane.
Melbourne.
Brisbane. Okay.
Yeah.
Brisbane.
Brisbane.
No, there's no R. That would be Scottish Brisbane. This is Australia Brisbane. Mm.
So Michael is our second NSNG guest, our first from Australia.
Yes.
Yes. So we have one American, one Australian.
Who was the other one?
Elizabeth.
So be third.
Who is the?
Anna.
Well, Anna's not a fan.
Oh, she's not. I think not. She might differ on that one.
All right. So, what are we talking about?
We're going to talk about life at Villa Capelli.
Yes.
And some of our guests that are here and the surprises some of these guests bring to us, and not material surprises, but...
Although we did get Vegemite, so I'm very excited
to try Vegemite. Yes. You've never tried Vegemite?
No, I've never tried it.
I'll say it in front of our two Australian guests here, but it is quite disgusting.
Maybe we should film me trying it.
Yeah.
No, they say that if you're not used to it, Vegemite's like licking a cat's butt, except I haven't met anyone that's done the experiment yet.
Exactly.
It's actually not that bad. It's very salty.
Yes.
Right? A little bit grainy, if I remember, or no?
It's very smooth.
Smooth, yeah.
But very tar-like.
So is it made from vegetables and mites?
I don't know. I know it's like vitamin B and yeast and stuff like that. So it's very strong taste.
What kind of yeast?
I don't know if I want to mention in front of my wife.
Anyway, so my daughter Casey walked into the. Our large room here, our hall, dining hall.
This is the first time we're actually recording the large hall, so
yes.
Hopefully it's not too tinny in here, guys. But
right.
Yeah.
She heard someone playing the piano, and at first thought it was the stereo. Do they still call it stereos?
The radio.
No. Your mom probably calls it the wireless.
No, she probably calls it the hi-fi. And lo and behold, it wasn't the stereo. It wasn't recorded music. It was Mike Hines, playing the piano and singing his heart out. So not only does Michael play a wonderful piano, the only problem is that we don't have a wonderful piano. We have a piano that's quite out of tune, but he still makes it sound good. But he also has a great singing voice. I think most like Elton John, mostly, correct?
I kind of turn it on to whatever voice I'm trying to do. So Elton or
he did
Neil.
The Bee Gees. Remember, he did the Bee Gees.
Yeah.
That was a tough one.
Yeah, but you just memorize the songs, right?
I'm better at memorizing the music rather than the words. The words, a bit as I get older, it's a bit harder to remember.
Yeah, but, I've always been that way though with songs. I'll remember a tune in my mind.
Yeah.
But I've never, ever really remembered the lyrics, except, of course, for my favorite song that I remember from a child, my confirmation song in Catholic school. An army of youth fighting for standards of truth. We are fighting for Christ our Lord. Heads lifted high, Catholic action, our cry, and the cross our only sword. On earth's battlefield, never a vantage, Julio. We are fighting for Christ our Lord. That's about it. It's a good Christian war song, basically.
Oh, no.
But no, I'm never very good with lyrics either.
Yeah.
But you do have help there, I see, on top of the piano.
Oh, that's, yeah, if it's newer songs, I'm I need to.
But what is that? Is that a computer?
Or? Oh, it's a laptop. It just folds all the way over. And,
wow, fancy schmancy. Wow, you Australians have the technology.
But you do know something like 400 songs?
Yeah, 400 or 500. It's,
really? Memorized?
Yes.
Most of them, yeah.
Isn't that crazy? He's like a human jukebox.
It's the trick of the trade. You just know as many songs as you can, so if people ask for them, they think you're a freaking genius when you pull it out. So.
I think you are a genius, because I don't see. I cannot remember in band, marching band, having to memorize the songs for the damn competition, and I hated it. I could not memorize for the life of me the damn song.
So do you consider yourself a genius or an idiot savant?
Idiot savant.
Okay, because you can't tie your shoes, right?
No. Well, yeah, the geniuses write the tunes. I just play them.
So Casey came in and heard Michael playing, and she comes running to me and said, Dad, have you heard Mike playing the piano? I said, no. So, what was it, 2 evenings ago?
Yeah.
We came in here and poured ourselves a few drinks. And Michael went at it on the stand-up. It is a stand-up piano,
yes,
right?
Yes.
That's what that's called.
An ex-pianola.
Yeah.
It used to have the
right. The it used to play by itself, basically.
Yeah.
Right.
All that's been pulled out, and it's just a piano that's left.
And the piano itself has kind of a cool story, by the way. I guess about 10 years ago, if not more, when some of our very early guests came to stay here, there was a group with Joanne Davis and Cheryl. What's Cheryl's last name? I don't remember. Cheryl Benton, and their husbands came to stay here for a few days or a week. And one day we went to my friend's, let's say, antique shop. I bought a couple of things, and he had this upright piano that he wanted to sell me. And I said, no, I really don't need a piano, although it would be nice to have one at the villa, but I don't play the piano, so no thanks. So little did I know that behind my back, Joanne and Cheryl bought the piano for us. Oh. And a couple of days later, the piano arrived. And it's here now.
Nice.
Yeah, it was a nice, very nice housewarming gift.
Yes. I'm surprised how many, not how many, we haven't had a ton, but we've had enough guests come that just like, oh, can I play the piano? And they sit down and they start playing the piano.
Yeah,
I mean,
but not like
Mike.
Oh,
no,
wait
no.
a minute. Hey, well, how about Stefano? Stefano... So Cecotto, Stefano Maria Cecotto. He's another one. He comes into when the piano was in my mother's room, what is now my mother's room. He goes in there, doesn't say anything to anyone, and we hear music coming out of the windows of my mother's room.
But it was
Bach and Beethoven. Mm-hmm. But he did I think 10 years of.
He was one test away from becoming a master or something like that, whatever they call it in Italy. Like he would be able to teach it then.
He did the National Music Academy.
Oh, okay. Something like that, yeah.
It was amazing. I mean, you know, all these classical...
But then you decided, nah, I don't want to do that. You became an architect instead. It was like, what?
they're the real piano. I'm a thumper. I just...
It's two different things. Mm. Yeah, I mean, but he was the same thing, because somebody was like, oh, can you play... They named like a specific Bach song or something.
Symphony or opus.
Yeah. And he's like, oh yeah. And he just sat down and started playing. It was like, whoa, what? Like how you don't need sheet music to do this? It's crazy.
So here we are with Michael and his lovely wife.
Hi.
I know you guys heard her laughing in the background, so we had to at least.
Mike, do you want to play a song for us?
Yeah. Do you have a request? I need a request.
You need a request. Yes. Should we just start with Hallelujah? Oh, no, you don't have the worst of that.
I'll have it on the laptop. Yeah.
Let's start with like just a few bars of it. You don't have to do the whole thing.
Okay.
Yeah. It's a good intro. Right?
Yeah. Absolutely.
This is for those of you who don't know. This Hallelujah is written by Leonard Cohen, a Canadian songwriter, who a lot of people have dubbed the songwriter's songwriter, probably one of the greatest songwriters of our time. The song most recently made famous by Jeff Buckley,
yes, yes.
A young musician who died very early. Unfortunately, he drowned in his car. I think there was a suicide, if I'm not mistaken.
I thought it was misadventure.
No, I think it was a suicide. Don't quote me on that. But any of you listening, please feel free to correct me like you always do.
Yes, you can do it in the show notes, which will be livingvillacapelli.com/. I don't remember. I think it's 45. I'll edit that out if it's not 45.
Okay. Here we go. Here's Michael on the untuned piano.
Yes.
Singing and playing Hallelujah.
Tell Anna and Vinny they can go suck it because all they do is play YouTube music. We have the real damn thing.
Right. So I assume you have a piano at home.
Yes.
A proper piano? Or?
I have a regular upright piano. Uh-huh. I've got an old church organ under my head that actually has the little pump pedals to make it go. Yeah. But that was from the 1940s. I can't remember how I found that one. And an electric piano, which is the one that goes to gigs and use that for that. So
do you do gigs?
Yeah. I used to do it for a living, and then I took my mother's advice and got a real job. Actually, Mum never said that. She was always happy that I was playing. But
She's a big fan of music, right? Your whole family are musicians, and she is too.
Yes, she can play and she can sing. I've got four brothers, and they're all kind of musical. We get together and jam every now and then.
Oh, wow.
Cool.
And Dad sings as well.
Really?
So.
And the wife falls over with the wine.
Yes.
I know. Awkward.
Actually, at the cathedral, you went into the cathedral today, right?
They didn't get to it in time to make it.
No. Terlizzi this morning.
Yes.
Did you see the organ in there?
Up the back, up the top.
No. Oh, there's one up front from the 1700s.
Oh, I didn't say that. No.
Oh, I got to take you back and show it to you. It's really amazing.
Do they let him play?
maybe. I don't know. I don't know how you would play it. But it's beautiful. It's all wood, painted greenish color with a wooden little chair. But it's all like one piece. The chair and the whole thing is all one piece.
Oh, yeah. They have the big pedals and stuff.
Yeah. Oh, nice. You need clown shoes to play it. So you've been to Italy before?
Yes, this is our third time to Italy. This is our first time to Puglia. We've been to, I'm going to be snooty and use the Italian pronunciation, Firenze, Positano, and Roma, Roma, due times, twice.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. But this is our third time and listening to Vinnie and Anna and banging on about Villa Capelli all the time. I thought, okay, this is our chance. We can go and see the...
Yeah, we're glad you guys did. Yeah.
And I've been trying not to be a big fanboy the entire time it's been.
No. So you're enjoying it?
Oh, absolutely. This is...
It's the most beautiful place.
Yeah, okay. It's climate-wise, it's quite similar to Australia, actually. Uh-huh. It's probably the same, almost the same longitude, is it?
Yeah.
I guess it is, Latitude, longitude, I don't know.
Latitude is equator, so yeah.
So, right? You know, bit muggy, bit warm.
Latitude is horizontal.
Right, so I think he means latitude.
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 Yeah. Okay.
But even the villa itself is beautiful, not just Puglia and the countryside. The villa is
incredible. Absolutely. Except one thing I will say is you have an over enthusiastic cock across the road.
Yes, there is a rooster that likes to roost continuously. But
I thought they were supposed to just do it at dawn.
I think it's a fallacy.
It is.
Funny how cock and fallacy is kind of like the same kind of thing, isn't it? is Italy one of your favorite places to visit, or?
Yes, every trip we've gone to Italy. We do other countries. We've been to a bit of Germany, a bit of Norway. We really like Norway as well.
Norway's beautiful.
Italy is just, and I think the food and the wine has a lot to do with it.
Yeah, okay. Exactly.
The lifestyle. Yeah. The Italians know how to live.
Yes.
As a matter of fact, we went shopping this morning. Because, as we tell people, Terlizzi is foodie heaven.
Yes.
So we went shopping this morning for tonight's dinner, which we're going to have pretty soon.
Yes.
And we bought zucchini flowers, which we're going to make stuffed with mozzarella and anchovy, and then fry them.
Yep.
We bought lots of different types of meat to make our meat ragu. There's always this raging argument of what do you call it? Do you call it ragu, or do you call it sauce, or do you call it gravy? Mm-hmm. So in America, a lot of people call it gravy. We beg to differ.
Mm-hmm. But did you hear the I don't know who told me this. Some guest told me what their theory was on why it's called gravy.
Why?
Because when the Italian-Americans and, say, the Irish, we're both like kind of living in New York, and the Irish are asking, they never made pasta and they made a sauce to put on pasta.
Right.
So they're asking, what are you making?
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the sauces would kind of maybe like a ragu, you make it with meat, which is a gravy is meat drippings. You know, something you put. So they explained it to them using their terms, like it's a gravy that you put on pasta. So they kind of explained it in their term. That's why they started calling it gravy.
No.
Yeah, but that's because of the Irish. The Irish and Italians never got along anyway.
So it's all the Irish fault.
It's all Irish. But
my family.
But the funny thing is, I grew up in Boston, which is a heavily Irish populated city, but also Italian. But even there, the Italian and the Irish never really got along. Yeah, for going back to when my grandfather first started going there in 1914, he had trouble with his Irish boss in the construction that he was working in. But then, of course, oddly enough, as always happens, the Irish and the Italians interwed.
Yep.
They marry each other, and they say that the Italian and Irish kids are the most gorgeous kids on the planet. But that's the Italian and the Irish that say that, of course.
Yeah. So they produce Italian children that get sunburnt.
Yes, and with a really bad temper.
From which side?
Both. So, so it's winter now in Australia.
Yes.
So you usually travel during the European summers, right?
No, we don't. Last time we were here was the end of November.
Uh-huh.
And it was great because there was bugger all other people here.
Yeah. Right, right. So, yeah.
In Italy.
Bugger all means really nobody here.
Yes. Sorry, I forgot my Australian lingo.
Oh,
yeah. I say, if you want a drink in Australia, you say you're drier than a dead dingo's donga.
I like that.
Yeah, or flat out like a lizard drinking if you're really busy.
That's funny. And you also have your own version of Cockney rhyming slang, right?
I'm actually from talking to you this afternoon. I think there might be a lot of similarities. But we have septic tank
Right, yank.
Means a yank. Hit the frog and toad, so hit the road. When you're leaving.
It's similar, though.
It's the same thing.
Yeah, the Cockney ones that I remember are... by the way, Cockney rhyming slang, for those of you who don't know, is a way of talking to people who understand Cockney rhyming slang. So you can say things that other people who don't understand Cockney rhyming slang won't know what you're talking about. Like Ruby Murray. Someone says, how about Ruby Murray? The other person knows that you want to have curry. So it's Ruby Murray, curry. So you have to always understand the answer to the cryptic quote that they're saying. As Mike said earlier, Sherman Tank, yank. When they're talking about American people, they'll say, oh, he's such a Sherman Tank. Mm-hmm. The other person knows they're saying he's a yank. Yeah. Or septic, he's such a septic.
Seppo.
Yeah. When you see a beautiful girl with big breasts, you say, "Oh, Bristol cities," and the other person knows titties. So those are some of the.
There used to be, wasn't that some of the terms of the gay culture too? They had to use those terms to know. Back in the day, yeah.
Speaking of gay culture, Cole Porter. Do you know any Cole Porter?
No, but no? I do like his stuff. I've never. What was famous ones of his?
I Get No Kick from Champagne.
Oh, I could do. Yeah.
Yeah.
I get no kick from champagne. Mere alcohol, it doesn't thrill me at all. But tell me, why should it be true that I get a kick out of you? Some get their kicks from cocaine.
Is that the right?
Yeah. I heard that if I had even one sniff, it would bore me terrifically too. But I get a kick out of you.
Now that was a segue. That was a segue. Yeah, but I mean, there are some great songwriters. I remember when, I guess, Elton John, remember he split up from his writing partner?
Oh, Bernie Taupin.
Yeah, Bernie Taupin. Mm-hmm. And the music wasn't very good.
I suppose because he gets a lyric first from whoever writes it, Bernie normally.
Right, right.
And then he'll write the music to it. So maybe, I don't know if the music just inspired him differently.
Yeah.
Or he was in the middle of his, you know, drinking and cocaine too much.
Right, right.
When did they break up?
I don't know. It
would have been early 80s
for just a few years.
5 years. Oh, because they're... I was going to say...
No, they weren't a couple. At least I don't think they were.
No. But I'm saying, but does he write... He still writes with... I thought he still wrote with somebody.
Yeah, he's back with Bernie.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
But then when he was doing songs like Blue Eyes and all that sort of thing, he was with other artists. When he did The Lion King, most of that was with the lyricist Tim Rice,
who did Jesus Christ Superstar
and Joseph and the Technicolor Dreamcoat and all that sort of thing.
Oh, so, speaking of Joseph and Technicolor Dreamcoat, I have to take you, hopefully we'll have time tomorrow morning, to one of the older churches in Terlizzi where we stopped to buy the zucchini flowers today, that big church sort of behind us.
Oh, okay.
They discovered frescoes in there from the 1600s. Oh. They discovered them just about maybe 5 years ago, and they've restored them all. But it's the entire gallery around what would be the cloister where the monks and nuns lived. Mm. So it's huge. Yeah. It's the entire story of Joseph and his multicolored coat.
Oh.
Yes.
Wow. Nice.
The old Bible story of Joseph.
They just discovered it. You know, somebody put a nail and some plaster fell off and oh, okay.
Yeah. And there's something that's thousands of years old.
Right. speaking of Lion King, one of the probably weirdest and in a sense silliest concerts I ever went to. Mm. It was the only time I saw Elton John. Madison Square Garden, must have been, I guess mid-80s, early 90s, mid-80s. The first five or six rows were all what looked like male homosexuals. And you could tell because there were a few priests interspersed in there. The rest were couples where the couples, like throughout the entire Madison Square Garden, they were all singing the songs to each other.
No.
They were all like love songs that Elton John had written, but usually probably to a man. Yeah, but, yeah. But, you know, these hetero couples, you know, the guy would be singing to the girl, the girl would be singing to the guy. Yep. But then the climax of the show, unfortunately, was when these big screens came down and he did the theme to Lion King. It was oh my God, this is so not a concert. Exactly. Yeah. And I swear everybody was getting the audience wasn't very young.
Yeah. So,
I swear they were getting drunk on Geritol.
And then, but when you get to that age, you don't really want to be going home and feeling their love tonight.
No. Well, no, that's the way. That's the only way you can have love is when you feel it, because you don't want to see it.
You know, you go home and the bed smells of lavender.
And lanolin. Yeah. So speaking of Elton John, can you do an Elton John song for us?
Yeah. Anyone in particular?
Not Can You Feel the Love Tonight?
No. Not Lion King.
Not Lion King.
Can you do Candles in the Wind?
Yeah. Not the Diana one. I've never.
No, the original one. Okay. The Marilyn Monroe one.
Yes, the real one.
Real one.
Goodbye, Norma Jean. Though I never knew you at all, you had the grace to hold yourself when those around you crawled. They crawled out of the woodwork, then they whispered into your brain. They set you on a treadmill, and they made you change your name. And it seems to me you lived your life like a candle in the wind, never knowing who to cling to when the rain set in. And I would have liked to know you, but I was just a kid. Your candle burned out long before your legend ever did. Found in the new. And it seems to me you lived your life like a candle in the wind, never knowing who to cling to when the rain set in. And I would have liked to know you, but I was just a kid. Your candle burned out long before your legend ever did.
I literally have goosebumps. like goosebumps. See, see.
Don't you tear up, Stephen? Don't you?
I know. Yeah, I'm like,
you know, I do. Yeah. Even though he has no idea who Marilyn Monroe is.
I do too. She was the big blonde with big boobies.
That was about her big boobies.
I know. Yeah. No, she's actually a pretty good actress.
Yeah, she was actually. She was, but that's why also I think that song is so poignant. And as a matter of fact, I think for the generation that didn't know Marilyn Monroe when she was alive, that song has probably done more for her legend than anything else, because that's how most younger people. I guess if I could be even called younger, because I think she was already dead when I was born. Shortly after, it's just when did she die? I don't know when she died.
In the 60s somewhere.
Okay. So, but I was like 10 years old. So I don't know who the fuck Marilyn Monroe was. But the whole story has always been so tragic and sad and romantic at the same time. Yeah. And Elton John and I guess Bernie Taupin, right, did such a great job of capturing that essence, that whole feeling of this wonderful shining light that was dimmed long before she should have been.
Beautiful legacy.
Really. And the song really, really not only captures it, but has carried it on, has brought it on for a new generation.
Yeah, well, it still gets, you get people that will come into a bar that I'm playing at and they'll still ask for that. And these are 20-year-olds today and things like that. And Tiny Dancer and all those sort of tunes. And I just think it's really accessible, so they like to sing along with it.
But also, some of those, I mean, those are when music was music. You know, whereas now, it's like, what is it now? I don't get what...
It's a...
Well, now it's all...
But
it's also about rhythm and beat, and they're trying to see... I remember reading something years ago about how the, I guess, I don't know what it's called, the beats just keep increasing. You know, in music, and that's what it's all about how fast can those beats go.
You sound like a bunch of old fogies, though. Our music in our day was so much better than music now.
That's our music. When we were young, that was music.
You could hear the words.
Back in my day, we used to put on the gramophone, and we used to
walk 10 miles to school in the snow and 5 miles back.
Why didn't
you walk 5 miles back to school? Oh, we took a shortcut.
But that was like your mom today. Oh, well, that's not dancing. They're not dancing. They're just like shaking. We went to a party last night where people were dancing, but they weren't.
It's also because they were like 75, 80 years old. They can't really move that much. Jesus Christ.
Yeah, but she meant
you could hear them.
Oh, this was
dancing.
The one across the road.
Yeah. They weren't doing the couples dance. Where they weren't doing a man and a woman spinning and doing the. The two-step or whatever waltz they were.
If they started really dancing, the sound of the bones clinking would have drowned out the music.
The hips getting
the hipsters, right?
Yeah, that's the hipsters.
Right, exactly. That's why they're called hipsters. Right. So songwriters and musicians like Elton John, even people like Jackson Browne.
Yes.
Where, you know, I have a certain group of singers, songwriters that I put in the category all by themselves. Jackson Browne would be one of them. Yep. Elton John is one. Bruce Springsteen, of course. Billy Joel is another one. And one who has, he only came around for a little bit, always behind the scenes, Warren Zevon.
He's gone now.
But like Elton John, does he sing, or do most of these people sing in a particular key that is easier for most people to like listen to or sing back if they want to? Is it because like Freddie Mercury, who you love, does not sing in one of those those middle keys mid range.
He's right up there.
He's up there in heaven, both literally and figuratively.
Yes. It doesn't really matter. Elton John's got a bit of a lower voice. Well, now he does because he actually had his throat operated on in Australia, in the mid-80s, when he pretended to get married.
To a woman?
Yes.
Really?
Yeah, he got married to, I think her name was Renata. She was a sound engineer, a German sound engineer.
Yeah? Right.
And so that, of course, didn't last because he had other proclivities.
Right.
But ever since then, because he used to have this really high voice, he used to, you know. So he had this really high voice, but then in the mid-70s or mid-80s, he had this throat operation because he's a really hard worker and he'd just blow his voice out all the time, and so his voice has dropped. And it happens with age as well.
That's right, true.
Right. Billy Joel says the same thing. He's had to drop the keys of his songs to do that.
Range. Are those really popular songs all written in more or less a sort of what I would call a mid-range?
Yeah, most of them are medium to higher, because I think it gets more successful if girls want to sing along with it.
Okay. Uh-huh.
Because I always find that the guys will follow the girls.
Yeah.
If it's a guy's song, the girls, they couldn't give a shit.
There was in Terlizzi, in this town that we're in, a very famous singer in the 1700s, who is a contemporary of, what's his name now, the castrato. They did a movie about him not recently, but a few years back. Anyway, he was also a castrato, what they call here in Italy a white voice.
Oh, okay.
They call them white voices. And I think something like 8 out of 10 children, male boys, who were castrated in order to sing so they could help support their families, 8 out of 10 died during the operation or shortly after.
No.
Yeah. From infections and bleeding.
I was going to say, it doesn't seem like it would be that complicated of a...
Well, it was back then, infection or anything else, why can't I think of the other... Anyway, this guy's name is Giuseppe Milico.
Okay.
You should look him up. He was a contemporary and rival of... I can't think of his name. I'll think of his name. Anyone listening, please write in so that you can remind me. Actually, can you text me right now?
I'll let you know. You'll remember before they write it.
Speaking of mid-range voices and... I went to I have two concerts that I went to that are the most memorable in my career, my life. Three, actually. The first one that I ever went to, which was Three Dog Night.
Oh, okay.
At Boston Garden.
Joy to the World and...
Right.
And
Jeremiah was a bullfrog.
Yeah.
Can he do that?
Yeah.
Really? Which one?
Oh, Jeremiah was...
Do a little bit of Jeremiah was a bullfrog. I didn't know you could do this. I mean, Three Dog Night is going back.
I told you, he's a human jukebox.
Jeremiah was a bullfrog. He was a good friend of mine. Had some mighty fine wine, singing joy to the world. Oh, boys and girls, joy to the fishes in the deep blue sea, joy to you and me.
Now, what a silly song, though.
I mean,
what the fuck was that about?
Jeremiah was a bullfrog.
Yeah.
I don't know how a bullfrog buys wine.
I don't know. It's like...
Or drinks wine.
Right.
With his really long tongue.
Right. So Three Dog Night was the first concert I remember, because Three Dog Night was really, really big when I was much younger. Mm. I guess I was probably the 60s, right? Late 60s.
Yeah.
Then, of course, there was a concert I went to because I was too young to go to Woodstock. Right, because that was 1969, right? So I was still
69.
69. How about a 68? You do me, I'll owe you one.
I've never heard that.
So I was just graduating from high school, actually, right? 69. No, just graduating from grammar school, going into high school, 1969. Mm. So I didn't make it to Woodstock. But I did go to another really great concert which had more people than Woodstock. In 1973, when I got out of high school, it was Watkins Glen. at Watkins Glen, New York, the racetrack. I think it was 700,000 or 750,000 people. Because Woodstock, I think, was 400,000, something around there.
That's massive.
Now, it wasn't as famous or as earth-shattering as Woodstock, because Woodstock had some of the greatest talent, you know, in the music world of the day. And the whole gestalt of the time was, you know, anti-war and against the Vietnam War and stuff. So there was a whole different feeling to it. But Watkins Glen had three bands. The opening band was The Band. Robbie Robertson was the big singer in it, and then became an actor as well. And Martin Scorsese did a documentary on them. Their big album was called Music at from the Big Pink. I think it was a Big Pink house that they shared near where I was when I was in the monastery. This is a bombshell for you. Then the second act was The Grateful Dead. Which most of my friends in high school were big fans of the Grateful Dead. I was never. But the final act was my favorite band all through high school and a lot of college, the Allman Brothers. At that time also, we were city kids from Boston who went to this big concert. We had no idea what we were getting ourselves into. So we didn't bring much money with us. We brought no food and nothing to drink. When we got there, we realized it was going to be a long haul, that this was going to be a long, long concert into the night, and we were thirsty and hungry. And other people had were barbecuing hamburgers and had beers and stuff, and we were getting the smell and we were getting hungry. But what we did bring with us as good high school kids was lots of acid, hits of speed, and downers. But I mean, like bags of them. Bags.
Oh my God! And nice security.
Yes, and sheets, sheets of what was then blotter acid, Mr. Natural blotter acid. So here we are at this concert, with not much money at first, and we're selling drugs. The amphetamines were known as Black Beauties. The reds were the downers were Seconals. And the acid was Mr. Natural blotter acid. So we were trading hits of acid and amphetamines and Seconals for hamburgers and beer. That's how we got through it. So we went there with, you know, bags of drugs and came back with bags of money. And needless to say, by the time the Allman Brothers came on,
everyone was stoned except for you guys.
No, I had seven hits of acid in me. So that's why it was like the most amazing concert I've ever been to in my life, because it was a total hallucinogenic trip for me.
Stephen, are you glad that Paul got through this stage before you?
Yes. And we do not condone this activity, listening.
Do not try this at all.
Yeah.
But you can try it at a concert. but the most beautiful, probably the most beautiful concert I went to, though, was Billy Joel at Carnegie Hall.
Nice.
Back in college days, we got tickets to see Billy Joel in early years. Of course, everyone always says about any artist, oh, his early stuff was so much better. Now it's not that good. His early stuff was great. And the same is true for Billy Joel. So Billy Joel was playing on stage at Carnegie Hall, and the music is wonderful. And he gets to, I think, New York State of Mind. And he's playing New York State of Mind. Suddenly, the curtains open on the stage behind them at Carnegie Hall, and they reveal a 40-piece orchestra that just kicks in with it. Yeah. I got goosebumps now just talking about it. Can you do New York State of Mind?
Yeah.
Do you mind doing it? Or?
No.
Yeah.
Some folks like to get away, take a holiday from the neighborhood. Hop a flight to Miami Beach or to Hollywood. Me, I'm taking a Greyhound on the Hudson River line. I'm in a New York state of mind. Thank you. movie stars in the fancy cars and the limousines. Been high in the Rockies under the evergreens. I know what I'm needing. I don't wanna waste more time. I'm in a New York state of mind. So easy living day by day, out of touch with the rhythm and blues. Now all I need is a little give and take. New York Times. Look it up the court, man. Come down to reality. It's fine with me, cause I've let it slide. Don't care if it's Chinatown or on the riverside. Well, I know what I'm needing. I've left it all behind. I'm in a New York state of mind. I've left it all behind. I'm in a New York state of mind.
Okay, I can admit it now. Whenever people ask me, what do I miss about New York, or do I miss New York, my answer is always no. I really don't miss New York. I miss a couple of things about it, like the Sunday Times in my hands, bagels, and Chinese food. But after hearing that song tonight, guess what? I now officially miss New York.
No, you don't. Tomorrow morning you won't.
No, but now I do.
My work here is done.
Yes, exactly. And our work here is done, I think, right?
I think it was, yeah. I think we're wrapped up. All right, next time, sorry, guys, we've been really, really, really busy. So we'll get this podcast out soon because this is an easy one for me to do show notes on. But we've been swamped with guests. This is our high season, so forgive us for not having a podcast out. But thanks for Mike for helping us out with this
one.
Yes. And then we'll do more. Remember to hit subscribe on your podcast player so you never miss another episode. Oh, and for those listening, the 3-liter tins are on their way to the States as we speak. We are
not. I'm taking one with me.
Yeah. So those are on their way. We kind of snuck up on us again, the orders. So they're on their way. Do you have anything else?
No. Thank you very much for all your support.
But we should go out on a song, right?
You want to do the Queen song, your favorite song?
Yeah, we're gonna go out on the Queen song. So I won't even bother, guys, with our outro music. This is going to be our outro music for this episode. So thank you, guys. Until next time, arrivederci.
Freddie Mercury lives.
Yeah. Anybody find me somebody to love? Each morning I get up and dial, and better stand on my feet and take a look in the mirror and cry. Lord, what you doing to me? Will I spend all my years believing them that I just can't get no relief? Lord, somebody, oh somebody, let anybody find me somebody to love. I got no feel, I got no rhythm. Well, I just keep losing my beat. I'm alright, I'm alright. I ain't gonna face a defeat. Well, I gotta get out of this prison cell. One day I'm gonna be free, Lord. Find me somebody to love. 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 Love, love. Find me somebody to love. Find somebody, 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 somebody. somebody fine. Anyone find me somebody to love? Anybody find me somebody to love? Find me somebody to love. Find me somebody.
One up there.
Thanks again, Mike. Bye.